Today's episode is brought to you by our sponsor, Atlantic Aviation. Atlantic Aviation provides aircraft ground support in over 100 locations across the United States. I am so proud to be partnered with a company that puts their people first and highly values diversity and inclusion. Atlantic Aviation's vision and mission is evident through their relentless focus on culture, safety, and service. Experience the Atlantic attitude today. Check out www.atlanticaviation.com to see all 100 plus locations and plan your next visit. Our guest today is aviation attorney Alina Nasser. Alina was born and raised in Costa Rica. Her father, who's also an attorney, had a love for aviation that was passed along to Alina. As a graduate of the University of Texas at Austin and the prestigious university in Belgium, KU Leuven, Alina practices aviation and competition law as a partner in her home country. I met Alina a few years back when she became the president of the International Aviation Women's Association, Iowa. She was relatively young and determined to bring change for women in aviation. In this episode, we hear about Alina's childhood in San Jose and how her interest in aviation, especially aviation law, came about. Alina also talks about a brief career change that helped define her career aspirations as an attorney. She shares insights about her profession. Finally, Alina talks about the Iowa Soaring Through Glass Ceiling Report, which highlights how far women in aviation have come and pathways forward, that was published during her leadership at Iowa. Alina, welcome to the Aviate with Shasta podcast. How are you doing today?
Very well, Shasta. Thank you very much for this opportunity. It's really an honor to be in your podcast.
Oh, wow. It's truly an honor for me. And what I would love for you to do, Alina, is take us back to when you were a young girl. What were some of your fondest memories growing up in Costa Rica? And when did you discover your passion for aviation?
Well, I have to say that I have a very nice, very happy childhood. My fondest memories are probably of the times that we used to go and visit my grandparents. We used to go and play outdoors a lot. We used to go take the car, go to the mountains and find just a nice spot to have a picnic and play with a ball. And so those kind of memories are really nice ones that I have from my childhood. And about my passion for aviation, I think it started as a result of my father's own passion for aviation. I think he wanted to be a pilot. He didn't have the chance at the time. But he used to take me when I was a little kid and to see there's a small airport in Costa Rica for domestic operations. And he used to take me to the airport to see the small planes. Actually, he wanted to see the planes himself, but he used to take me with him, and it was a very nice memory that I have. I guess that's when my passion for and my interest for aviation started.
You know, it's so amazing because I think for women who are empowered in aviation, a lot of that comes from their dad. And that's the case for me. My dad was very supportive because he wanted to be a pilot and he couldn't live that dream. So I can totally relate. And that's so amazing. And did you grow up in San Jose, Costa Rica?
I did. I was born and raised in the capital city, San Jose. But Costa Rica is really a small country, so you can visit from coast to coast in one day, basically.
So I actually went to Costa Rica. This was back in, I think, 2006, 16. And I'm terrified of like big oceans. You wouldn't believe that since I flew over them. But I was so terrified, and I actually learned how to surf, and it was amazing food. The people are so humble, and I mean, it's just such a magical place to be. So I'm curious, Costa Rica is a beautiful country known for its surfing, wildlife, coffee. It truly is a vacation destination. Can you tell us a little bit more about your home country and what aviation is like, or how it maybe is different from the U.S.?
Absolutely. Well, I am fully aware that Costa Rica is well known for its rich nature, the rainforest, the coast, the beaches, the volcanoes. But Costa Rica is truly more than a vacation destination. Let me take you back a little in the Costa Rica's history. In 1948, we had a civil war, which was, of course, as every war was a very sad episode in the history of Costa Rica. And after the civil war, the Costa Rican army was abolished. And there was a transition to the following, a peaceful transition to the following president with the democratic elections. And since then, we have lived without an army. And the beauty about it is that instead of investing a significant part of our budget in sustaining the military, we were able to invest in education and health. And the education in Costa Rica is mandatory, universal, and free of charge. And on top of that, we are also very well known for a sustainable productivity. We are very committed to sustainable production, to sustainable living, and to protect our environment. And that has made us, I would say, successful in the attraction of foreign investment. So in Costa Rica, you can see a lot of very relevant multinational companies doing business in Costa Rica in free zones and installing plants in our country, which is also a great thing because not only is a transfer of knowledge, of know-how, but also it generates jobs for our population.
Wow. Wow, that is fascinating. I love that. And I know this generation is all about sustainability. I mean, that is the future. And it's so wonderful to hear that that's a big priority item for Costa Rica as a country.
Absolutely. Sorry, you asked me about aviation?
Yes.
And how it is different from other countries or the U.S.? Well, of course, our country is much smaller, so we don't have a big private aviation a sector, so to say. We have, of course, domestic carriers that go to the coast areas, to some other areas that are farther from San Jose, the capital city. But we do have two main international carriers in Costa Rica, which are Avianca Costa Rica and Volaris. So it's not as big the industry as it is in other countries, of course, because of the size of Costa Rica. But I think it's a significant industry. Avianca Costa Rica, which was formerly known as LAXA, Líneas Aéreas de Costa Rica, has been in business for very long. So we have been successful in having our own carrier and growing with the industry and evolving with the industry as well.
So as a little girl, you see airplanes in San Jose, and you're very inspired. How did law come into the picture for you to become an aviation lawyer and partner at your firm?
Well, that's goes to my father as well. He's a lawyer. And in the 80s, he started his own law firm. I was very young. I was about 3 years old. And he found a niche in aviation and maritime law. And at the time, he was truly a visionary. So he started studying the sector, the industry, the law about this, about these two areas, and he set up his own law firm as a boutique in transportation, mainly maritime and aviation law. And then, well, he never forced me to go into law. That's something that I decided myself. Perhaps, of course, I had the influence of seeing my father and becoming interested in what he was doing. Sometimes when I was on vacations, he would take me to the office with him. So I was bringing a paper from one desk to the other and pretending and that I was working at the firm with him. So I became very interested in what he was doing. And of course, since his main practice was aviation and maritime, I understood more about the industry. And then when I started law school, I started to seeing more about the subject. The funny thing is that at some point during my law school time, I thought that I was not meant to be an aviation attorney, that I wanted to do something else. And I went into public law, but I didn't really like it. I really understood that my passion was aviation. And then since then, I've been doing that, and it's really what I like. I really enjoy it. It's so dynamic. It's so interesting. No day is the same. So I'm really happy that I decided to go into this field.
Well, if you don't mind, Alina, I would love to talk about maybe what caused you to doubt aviation law. And then you tried something else and you came back to it. Because I think sometimes women, when we have doubts, there's so much that we think about, and taking a risk is scary. Doing something different could be scary. But then when we actually do make that shift, we tend to stay there because it's like, well, you know, I've already moved here and, you know, I don't want to be perceived as I'm not sure or certain. So I'd love to hear from you about that process and what made you be confident about your decisions.
Absolutely. Well, at that time I was still studying law, and I had excellent professors of constitutional and public law. And it happened that they used to work for the Costa Rica's Attorney General's office, which is kind of different in Costa Rica than it is in the US. The Attorney General is the legal advisor to the government. So I was offered an internship with them, and I went to work for them. And I guess it's when you see the subject, when you are in class and you see the subject, you can like it or not. But definitely in practice, it's something different. And I really enjoyed my time. I spent 2 years working as an intern at the Attorney General's office. But I found that it was not that flexible, so to say, in terms of the litigation and the rules that kind of everything is a bit the same in terms of the issues that you deal with. So, and I compared that to what I had in aviation, that is very dynamic, that you always have something different, that and even the evolution of technology brings you different challenges in aviation. So I decided that although I really liked the subject and I learned a lot from my professors and from the persons I work with at the Attorney General's office, that I really, my passion was in aviation, and that was what I really enjoyed. I have to say it was not an easy decision, because I was really happy with what it was, with the persons that I was working with. So, I realized that was not what I wanted to do. And it was okay. You know, you can always change. It was early in my career, so perhaps there was no huge consequence of taking, so to say, a false step, although it wasn't a false step. But is even if you do it at some point in your career when you're performing as a professional, I think it's fine. It's fine. You have to. It's fine to be. It's okay to be scared. There are, in fact, I just made a decision a couple of years ago. I took a year to go to take a second master's in Europe, and I was very scared to do that step. I was thinking that it may not be the right time in my career after a pandemic. That I should have stayed and working at the law firm, consolidating my position, especially after the pandemic. But all those fears, I think, are normal. The important thing is to be brave. And if you really want to try something, you can try. It's okay. If it works, it's fantastic. If it doesn't work, it's okay. At least you know that you try.
Yeah, I love that. You know, you have to give, you know, anything that you want to do a try so that at least you can walk away saying that worked out great. Or now I know that that is not an option that I liked. And you learn so much about yourself, and you learn just in general, you learn so much from these experiences of high risk or changing. I'm curious to know, when you were studying at the University of Texas at Austin School of Law, what were some of the goals that you wanted to accomplish in your career? It seems like when people go to college, there's a problem they want to solve, or they want an outcome from all of the work that they do in their career. What was that for you?
Well, when I went to my master's in Austin, basically what I wanted to do was to understand the U.S. legal system, because at the time I was also working, or I was already working for the law firm. So we had a lot of clients from the U.S. So I wanted to understand the U.S. system. If you know how it works in the U.S., it may work differently in our jurisdictions, of course, but at least you can see it from the perspective of a U.S. client, a U.S. person. And of course, the experience of studying abroad and living in a different culture and learning from different people in a different environment is what I wanted to really experience. And I had a wonderful experience in Texas.
Oh, that's amazing. I actually live in Houston, so I'm living here and I'm experiencing the Texan life. I'm also curious to know, did you have a lot of role models growing up? And also, are there a lot of aviation women attorneys in Costa Rica?
I want to start with the last part of your question. No, there aren't many female aviation attorneys in Costa Rica. In fact, there aren't many aviation attorneys in Costa Rica. I would say that as a specialty in the field, that's probably 3 or 4 of us in Costa Rica, and probably some other few in Central America. I had not one, but many role models, and that definitely takes me to my experience with IAWA, the International Aviation Women's Association, from where I can say that most of my role models are from Iowa, my Iowa friends and women that I met because of the Iowa events and the Iowa conference and my involvement with Iowa, certainly women who have impacted my professional and even my personal life as well.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk about Iowa because that's when I initially met you, but I'm curious to know, I'm so curious today, when did your advocacy for women in aviation become a focus for you?
Well, I used to go, even as a student and very early in my career, I used to go to aviation law conferences precisely because at the law firm, aviation was and still is one of the main practice areas. And I used to see, of course, hundreds of men, and you can count women with your fingers. But I didn't realize that that was... That could be different until in 2004, I went to my first Iowa conference in San Francisco. And that was really an eye-opener. I saw women that became not only role models for me, but so highly accomplished women in such a different conference environment, talking about the most important issues of the industry as we used to do in the other conferences, being panelists and sharing their experiences with everyone during the conference. And then I realized that there could be something that was not really working well in the other venues, that the industry really had those women, very accomplished and powerful women, and that I just put the pieces together, and I understood that there was something that we should do about advocating for women in the industry.
So when we first met, I think you had just become the Iowa president. And I remember after meeting you, how happy I was to see a young, diverse woman in leadership. It was truly inspiring to know that could happen, especially in aviation. For the people who are listening, can you maybe share what is Iowa and what prompted you to pursue this leadership position within Iowa?
Well, thank you, Shasta. I have to say that I'm really happy to hear that it was inspiring, because that when we met, that was my very first public appearance as Iowa's president, and I was really nervous. I can tell you.
I wouldn't have picked up on that at all.
I'm glad to hear that. So, well, Iowa is the International Aviation Women's Association is organization that. That pursues the advancement of women in the aviation and aerospace industry. So Iowa has a network of accomplished women in the industry from all over the world. We support with scholarships for women who are studying in different areas of aviation with international universities in the United States, in Canada, in the Netherlands, in Australia, in France, and in Panama, in Latin America as well. So it's really an organization of women supporting other women to advance in the aviation industry. We want to change the industry in terms of making it more inclusive for women, and not only as into the industry in general, but into leadership positions. Because, of course, we are convinced, and it's not only what we think. There's a lot of information and studies that prove that when you have a more diverse leadership, the performance of the companies, the performance of the organizations improves in almost in every field.
And then what made you... I mean, I can see why you want to become a member of Iowa, but why become the president? Like, what made you go for that leap?
I have to be completely honest. I didn't pursue the presidency. I started working as a volunteer with Iowa. I remember at that time, Milene Skolnick was the vice president for public relations and communications, and she needed some help with the newsletter, the Iowa newsletter. And I volunteered to help, and apparently I did a good job. After that, I was invited to join the board, and I joined the board, and as VP for the Americas, my first position was as VP for the annual conference, with my friend Kathy Guilfoyle, and we organized the conferences in Boston and in Paris. And after that, I moved to other positions within the board. I think that what my fellow board members saw was my commitment and my passion, which was not exclusive of me. I mean, if you know Iowa women, you know how committed, how passionate they are to Iowa, to the cause of advancing women in general, but especially in the aviation industry. And it's something that that we all share as Iowa members. But they trusted me and honored me with the presidency. As I mentioned to you about this first public appearance, it was really scary. It was really challenging. At that time, of course, I had this kind of doubts or hesitation whether I was going to be able to do a good job. I was following very closely, of course, because I was on the board of Iowa, the work of the past presidents, all fantastic women who have achieved a lot in their professional lives and who have done a great job with Iowa. So it was really challenging, but and scary, as I said. But I thought that if my fellow board members were had this confidence in me, why wouldn't I have it myself? So I accepted the presidency, and it's something that I will never regret. It was truly a transformational experience from a professional and personal perspective. And if I could go back in time and do it again, I will do it again.
Oh, that's amazing. One thing that came from your presidency that I actually reference in a lot of presentations and even attending aviation conferences, I've heard this come up. And I think it's done our industry so much good. So during your time as president of Iowa, the Soaring Through the Glass Ceiling report was shared with the industry, which focused on the progress that our industry is making with women and how much more we have to go. It's packed with statistics, insights. I mean, it's just the data is so helpful to understand women in aviation. What inspired you to launch this report? I want to know.
Yes, Shasta. Well, first, when I was on the board of Iowa, I realized that we didn't have much hard data to support our mission. Perhaps we have one figure here and there about the 6% of female pilots worldwide and less than 5% female CEOs in the aviation industry, but that was what we had at the time. And truly, we live in a world in which we want to see the data. And so I started trying to gather information and data to bring a more robust information or arguments to the mission that we were pursuing. And then I realized that there was nothing much out there. So, or exclusive to the aviation industry. So, I was speaking with Michael Bell from Korn Ferry, and we put together this study. And then we realized that this study wouldn't be complete if we didn't invite some of the most relevant organizations that that are important in the aviation industry. So, we brought in the Aerospace Industries Association from the U.S., the IATA, CANSO, A4A, ACI, and that really gave us a lot of perspective from the different organizations that, of course, gave us a broader outreach in the industry and a lot of useful information that we could use to not only to provide evidence of the needs for advancement that we had in our industry, but also to highlight and to understand what the companies or the organizations that were doing good in terms of inclusion and diversity, what were their best practices and how we can emulate them in other organizations. So that was the first ever study of this kind in the aviation and aerospace industry. And I think if I look at what it represented, I think that it was a great tool at the time, and that is still used to show us that we still have a lot of work to do in the industry.
Yeah. No, I think the report was so fascinating. And when I first saw it and read through it, it was so great because you hear these numbers here and there. And to see the data in the way that you presented it, with giving information, explaining what the industry is, and then like the transitions of the report just made it very like a melody. And then you would just read the data, and it was just, it was great to see it all in one report that we can share with others. And I was very proud that you all worked on this and that this was available. I'd be interested to know, what was one of the key findings from the report? Because it did offer solutions that resonated most with you.
Well, I think the thing that most resonated with me, and especially because of my personal experience, is that you cannot be what you cannot see. So I didn't realize that there was a place for women at the top of the aviation industry until I saw and I met all the women that I met during my first Iowa conference. So one of the key enablers of the advancement of women in the industry is actually seeing that women have broken the glass ceiling and that have reached positions. So that's probably the thing that really resonates the most with me, and especially because I can identify myself with that particular finding.
Alina, when I got into aviation, you hear about Amelia Earhart. That's probably the big name that comes up with women in aviation. And usually the narrative around that is she's the pilot who got lost, which is so sad because she was so much more than that. But now in the position that I'm in, building the Aviate platform for women in aviation, I'm learning a lot about women in our history. And I find that from the very beginning, where the Wright brothers started, there were women in the background helping build the foundations of aviation. And throughout history, women have always been there, innovating, supporting, bringing revenue. I mean, they're just such great contributors to aviation, but sadly, their stories are not shared, and there's so few of them. And so I completely understand what you're saying. You can't be what you can't see. But also, let's bring out these women who have been there and retell their stories in an inspiring way where we will inspire other people to get into aviation. So I completely agree with you on that point. Role models are so important. So when comparing the Iowa report to the recent Women in Aviation Advisory Board Breaking Barriers for Women in Aviation report, are we making progress with women in aviation? I'm kind of comparing the numbers with the Women in Aviation Advisory report as well as the Iowa report, and I'm not seeing big changes, and I'm just thinking to myself, are we making progress? I'd love to hear what you have to say.
Well, I think the scope of the reports is different. What we were pursuing in the Soaring Through the Glass Ceilings as the first ever exercise of this kind in the industry was to understand what were the inhibitors and the enablers of women's advancement in the industry. I think the other report from the Women Innovation Advisory Board goes more into understanding what brings women to leadership and some other issues, which are, of course, not only very important, but also complement what we did in the first Soaring Through the Glass Ceiling. And I do think that we are making progress in terms of that the fact that there is more awareness. I can tell that there is more real commitment from the organizations. There's sometimes, or I found in the Soaring Through the Glass Ceiling that there was some kind of disconnect between what the top of the company or the organizations believe was going on in their organization and what was really happening. So, but I think that now there is more, not only awareness, but commitment, as I mentioned. But I think that actions may still fall short to see more significant progress. And of course, if you add to that the impact of the pandemic, not only in the aviation industry, but in general, what it represented to women, and we talk about the Great Resignation and the difficulties that women had faced, especially women have faced in during the pandemic. I guess we will have to measure again whether that we went backwards or whether we were able to sustain that progress, and what sort of actions we have to take these days to accelerate and try to catch up from what we missed because of the pandemic.
It's so important, like you said, this information complements each other. And now more than ever, we're having more attention, more visibility about the gender gaps. And what I appreciated about the Women in Aviation Advisory Board report is that it was 40 voices of women leaders in aviation coming together, sharing their perspectives and offering recommendations, not just to the FAA, but also to the industry and governments of what they can do to change, to better support women in the industry. And so I think this is the beginning to a ripple effect of change in the future. And I like how you say that it's good to reassess. I think, quite honestly, like every 3 to 5 years, we need to be getting together, reassessing, seeing the progress. But that was really great stuff that you just shared. And with what you've read in both reports and your work as an aviation attorney, as well as your work with Iowa, in your opinion, what is the first big step that we as an industry need to take to change the narrative around women in aviation?
I think we have to really understand what is going on within organizations and take actions inside. I mentioned to you the disconnect that I found between the top of the or the leadership of the organization and what the HR people are really seeing and what the women within the organization are really feeling about their opportunities, about their chances of taking different challenges within the company or advancing within the company. So I think the first thing that we have to do is really understand how we're doing in the inside and start from there. I mean, we can, it's really good to advocate. It's really good to raise awareness about diversity and inclusion in our industry, in our sector. But I think it's, as leaders, it's our own responsibility to see what we are doing inside our organizations and to take action inside our organizations, so we can not only talk about it, but we can show the evidence about how it has impacted our companies.
I love how you're an attorney and you use the word evidence. Absolutely. You know, we need the evidence to support the claim. As we get into the last segment of the conversation, I really want to talk about your career and aviation law, because I think when, at least when I went to college, not a lot of people in my classes, especially women, would say they wanted to become an aviation attorney. And I think it's a career that a lot of people don't realize is in the industry. So what is a day in the life of Alina Nasser? What can we expect when you show up at work? What is your everyday like?
So my day starts at the office. I grab my cup of tea. I, of course, talk to the people, take a few minutes to walk around, say hi. And then I see what's due for the day, try to answer my emails. But some of the time or some days, I really take a lot of time to mentor people within my organization, people in my team. I like to have these meetings in which we discuss the legal issues that we are dealing with. I always think that two or three minds think better than a single one. So we have a very open environment within my team. We can consult the issues that we're dealing with and hear different opinions and perspectives. And I think that the most innovative and impactful solutions come from these conversations that we hold as a team. We like to work very, very closely with each other. And as I said, I like to kind of challenge my team into doing something, learning something different. My team they do aviation, of course, but they also are interested in other fields of law. And I really like to cultivate that within the team, even trying to read things that are beyond law or beyond aviation, because, of course, it gives you a different perspective and a broader perspective, so to say, to resolve the cases or to deal with the issues.
What is the one thing that excites you most about your job?
That no day is the same.
Yeah.
Aviation is very dynamic. What you think you have solved in a way, the next day has different components or different items or issues that you have to consider, and then you have to be creative. The fact that we are dealing with a lot of technological advancement, particularly drones, really is really challenging in a very nice way, because you have to find solutions. The law is always behind the technology, so you have to make the operation of your client possible within the legal framework that exists. And I really love that. I really love the challenges that the dynamism of aviation brings to our daily practice.
If you were to talk to a young woman who's considering aviation law, what would be your advice to her?
Don't hesitate. It's really a wonderful field. It's really dynamic. I guess you know it personally, Shasta. It gets into your blood. Once you go into aviation, I guess any area of aviation or any sector of aviation, you really like it. It's precisely because of the different challenges. And if you go into aviation, you can be dealing with technology, you can be dealing with environment, you can be dealing with commercial agreements, with passengers. Even with the pandemic, I mean, it was a very challenging time when all the flights were grounded for a long time, and you learn from those experiences. So it's an industry that moves the world and connects the world. And if someone wants to go into aviation law, I would say don't wait a single minute. Start right now.
Oh, I love that. And where do you see yourself in the next 5 years? Are you in your forever job right now, or do you see something on the horizon?
Well, I am combining now my aviation practice with some work in space, which is really exciting. It's keeping me very, very excited about all the developments. It's a new world for me in terms of, I mean, you always know what's going on in aerospace. And of course, I have dealt with the aerospace industry during my over 20 years of practice in aviation and aerospace. But when you focus on space and all the things that are possible and all the things that are coming and things that you would probably thought would only happen in movies and then you are seeing now in reality, that's really something that I'm enjoying right now. So in 5 years, I see myself doing more work on space. Of course, I continue doing my work in aviation. Those are my two passions. And I would like to see, maybe not in 5 years, but maybe in 10 years or so, I would like to perhaps dedicate myself to some kind of project or some kind of organization that I'm still trying to figure out, what sort of organization, but that really has an impact on education, STEM, and women, and of course, development of my country. So those are the different things that I would like to put together in some sort of initiative or project that I would like to be doing in perhaps in 10 years or so. Something that really impacts the development in my country and that helps women come into the areas of STEM, perhaps do something in aviation, aerospace. So that sort of combination that really makes me excited and happy, that's what I would like to do at some point.
You know, Alina, you're a visionary in that, you know, For some people, which is okay, their goal is to be a partner at a law firm and to be working in their field. But you have this beautiful vision that is aligned with where the future is going. And that just says that you're a visionary, you're excited for the future, and you want to be a part of that future. So that's so great to hear that are your aspirations in the next 10 years. When we wrap up this conversation, this is a question I like to ask all of the guests. We have listeners from around the world, all interested in aviation, I think. What is the best advice you have received as a woman in aviation that you could pass along to the audience?
Something that a friend of mine, who is also an aviation lawyer in Colombia, said to me one time, travel light. That means find your balance. It took me a while to understand what she meant with that. I guess I am, of course, more mature now, and experience and the things that you live give you that perspective. So the earliest that you can understand and apply that, I think the better for you. So if I have to say something to someone, I will echo my friend's words and say, travel light.
Oh, I love that. Thank you. That was so thoughtful, that advice. Alina, it's been such a pleasure sitting down and getting to know you better. I've learned so much and I admire you as a leader, as a woman in aviation, as even a mom. I didn't know that you had children. All of these things, you know, you're just such a role model for women in aviation. And thank you for the work that you're doing. So much love and respect for you.
Thank you, Shasta. Exactly the same for you. I truly admire what you're doing. It was an honor for me to meet you when I met you a couple of, 4 years ago. I probably show the picture I have with you to everyone I know in the aviation industry. So it's something that I'm really proud of. So thank you very much for opening these spaces to women. And I really hope that I have said something that helps someone in her development, in her career, in going to the aviation field. And if someone is interested, I'm always reachable. So